Well, many kids are already back in school, so today a look at teaching, because despite many changes, there's still a standard model. You can hear it in this clip from the 1973 film The Paper Chase, set at Harvard Law School. John Houseman, the professor, Timothy Bottoms, the law student, James Hart, they're talking about a case in which a doctor botched an operation on someone's hand.
Mr. Hart, what damages do you think the doctor should pay? What did the doctor promise?
To fix the hand back to the way it was before it was burned.
And the result of the operation?
The hand was much worse than before he went to the doctor.
How should the court measure the damages? What should the doctor pay the boy?
It's called the Socratic method. A teacher asks questions, the student struggles to get the right answer. But our next guests say, turn that around. Teach the students to ask the right questions. Dan Rothstein and Lou Santana are co-directors of the Right Question Institute. Their new book is called Make Just One Change, Teach Students to Ask Their Own Questions. So, Lou, Dan, welcome.
Thank you. Great
Thank
to
you.
Be here.
Okay, so don't kids know how to ask questions? You even say, Dan, that kids intuitively know how to ask questions. So what are we missing?
Oh, in fact, kids are asking tons of questions when they're young, 3, 4, 5 years old. In fact, compared
why?
To 18-year-olds.
Yeah, right. They're always asking why.
Right. They want to know more. It's their way of trying to make sense of the world. But what happens? By the time they're 18, if you listen to what teachers report, very few students are asking questions. The New York Times interviewed college presidents. Leon Botstein of Bard College said, at the end of 4 years of college, our goal is for students to know how to ask strategic questions. Nancy Cantor, the president of Syracuse University, said, the goal for us is after 4 years of college, students should know how to ask the right questions. Well, there's no need to wait.
Why wait till then? So you are now working with younger people, but this all started, Luz, when you realized that it's not just the kids don't know how to ask the questions, parents don't either.
That's right. Many years ago, back in 1991, Dan and I and others were working in a dropout prevention program in Lawrence.
A dropout prevention program, we should say, in Lawrence, Massachusetts.
And as we work with the families, low-income and immigrant families, most of them, we heard from them that they were not going to the schools because they didn't even know what questions to ask. And we were very smart. We gave them the questions we thought were the most important that they should be asking.
So you get these parents saying, you know, we want to interact with our kids' schools, but we don't even know the questions. So you gave them the questions, not remembering the old teach a man to fish. You gave them the questions, and then what?
Well, we learned that it was not about giving them the questions, but it was about developing the skills so they could ask questions in right. any situation that they were in at the school, but also when they were looking for jobs, when they were going to their doctor's appointments, when they were looking for childcare, when they were interacting with the service agencies.
Just give us an example. I mean, just so people are saying, well, wait a minute, how could you not know what questions to ask of a school?
Well, for example, the parent finds out that the child will be held back in the same grade. So right there is an opportunity for them to ask questions about what are the reasons, who is making the decision, what can I do about it, what are the alternatives for my child.
And so you took this realization, Dan, wow, we can help people figure out for themselves what the questions are. You used it with patients in community health centers in Bed-Stuy, New York, workers at a plantation in Hawaii. Could you just tell us a little bit about how you started to expand it?
People from the Department of Health in Hawaii said, we have a problem because people have been provided with company-provided health care, and now the plantation is shutting down. It turns out company-provided housing is going to be divvied up. The land has to be used in different ways. So can you come and do a training with them about how they can learn how to ask their own questions so they can advocate for themselves? It was a somewhat daunting situation, but what we found was we were able to help them look at the fact that there was a decision made in a corporate boardroom in London that they could not have a say in. However, they could have a say in how the housing was going to be allocated. Could they get different kinds of job training? Could they create micro enterprises on the land? So people learned by being able to ask their own questions and participate in decisions that there were things that they could do to help themselves.
So that's how it might work for adults. You've now applied it to kids. For the workers, they needed
right.
those answers.
That's correct.
But for the kids, it seems to be more about the process of the question. Tell us about this. You've developed something called the Question Formulation Technique, QFT. Just walk us through it. It starts with something called the question focus.
So the question focuses, for example, a teacher here in a Boston high school was teaching Julia Alvarez's book In the Time of the Butterflies about Trujillo and the Dominican Republic, and very complicated issues, difficult situation. She wanted them to look at the issue of torture because the main characters were tortured in the novel. So she started off with, in some sense, her own perspective. Torture can never be justified. Well, that was going to elicit a response from the students thinking, well, that's what the teacher wants us to think, and so we're going to respond that way. So she changed it, and she created a question focus called Torture Can Be Justified. And then she had them go through a process where they produced questions where they had to use four rules for producing questions. They had to ask as many questions as they could, not stop to discuss, judge, or edit any of their questions, write down their questions exactly as they were stated, and they have to change any statement into a question. These four rules for producing questions provides an open but rigorous process for students to ask their own questions.
Well, what were some of the questions the kids came up with?
Right, so they asked questions about, well, what is torture? What's the difference between punishment and torture? When can torture be used? Who makes the decision? What happens if you get information from torture, but it's not the right information? They were asking very sophisticated questions that really are the kinds of questions that you'd want your Supreme Court justices to be thinking about when they're looking at these issues.
And as they were doing it, what was happening to the kids?
There were four different groups, four different dynamics. Some groups were pouncing on it, get very excited, feeding off of each other's questions. Others were thinking very slowly, thoughtfully. One of the students asked a question, does justice have anything to do with torture? And it made the other students to think about that. All of a sudden, they started thinking about justice. Well, what is justice?
So, there's another question.
Right, exactly.
Well, but, Lewis, how do you stop? I mean, we have spirited debates in our office. If someone puts a question out, everybody tries to answer it, even though none of us have a clue. It's just it's human nature.
Right.
How do they stop themselves from trying to answer it?
Well, that's one of the rules that they have to follow, not judging or answering the questions. And it requires some discipline.
And let me remind people, the rules are ask as many questions as you can, don't stop to talk about them or judge them, write down every question exactly as it's asked, and turn any statement into a question. So
that's
we're all about questions. No answers.
At that point.
Yeah.
So there is a time in the process to take action with the questions. But developing those rules, it took about 7 years because initially there were many other rules. And what we did was to boil them down to a point that we had what was essential in order to help the students formulate the questions.
Lewis Santana, she and colleague Dan Rothstein formed the Right Question Institute here in Massachusetts. Their book is Make Just One Change, teach students to ask their own questions, and this can be applied to math. They give an example of a teacher giving students a math problem to solve, but then starts them asking questions about the answer to the problem. So the answer isn't the end of the math lesson, it's the beginning. More on teaching kids to ask questions in 1 minute, here and now. Welcome back to our conversation with Lou Santana and Dan Rothstein, co-directors of the Right Question Institute. Their new book is Make Just One Change, teach students to ask their own questions. Their method is to give students a topic and these rules. Ask as many questions as you can. Don't stop to discuss, judge, or answer any. Write down every question exactly as it's asked. Turn all statements into questions. The students work in these small groups with the teachers monitoring the groups. Eventually, they get to answering the questions. But Dan, you say that by coming up with their own questions, students are engaging in two types of thinking, divergent and convergent. Explain.
Divergent thinking is when you're thinking in many different directions. It's what's traditionally seen as brainstorming. Brainstorming may not leave you with clarity. So what our process does is it tries to move them from that producing questions, that divergent point, to more convergent thinking where you begin to synthesize, analyze, prioritize. So we have students look at the differences between open and closed-ended questions. Closed-ended question can be answered with a yes or no or a simple one-word answer, and open-ended requires more explanation. What happens is that the students realize that how you phrase a question can actually yield you different kinds of information. That's a major discovery.
Give me an example.
When they ask, does justice have anything to do with torture? Students change that from a closed to an open-ended question as well. What is the connection between justice and torture?
So somebody couldn't just say yes or no.
Exactly. They had to begin to explain that. So then after they look at open and close and they practice changing from one kind to the other, we ask them to prioritize their questions. And, you know, Robin, I'm sure all of us have had this experience where we've been in a meeting and the first question that comes up is debated for 2 hours, and after 2 hours
You're
we
exhausted.
Slap our foreheads and we said, you know what, that wasn't the right question to ask. And this was the question we should have asked. So this is really a detour, spend time on questions, but then through the convergent thinking and bringing it together, you actually wind up with a shortcut.
And this is something that people in marketing know a lot about. In fact, you and your son, who's an entrepreneur, wrote an article about this. Marketers will spend a lot of time figuring out what the right question is because you can test a focus group with a question and realize it's the wrong question. Do you have an example of that, by the way?
When businesses ask, if we build the website this way, will people buy it? Instead of asking a question of how are they using the website, how do we design our website to match what they are doing and how they're using it? So you have to change the question from centered on you to looking at the customer first.
So marketers know how to know the importance of the right question. Mm-hmm. You're helping students know the importance of the right question. They're culling these questions down, and then what?
So when they've prioritized their questions, they work on specific projects. So, for example, in one school, a teacher wanted them to design a research experiment. So they had to figure out what's a testable question. Does pollution affect this neighborhood in Boston? Does the tectonic plate move in ways that affect communities today? So that they would do a testable question in that way. Some people might want to do a more research projects, essay projects, going in depth into historical causes of the Civil War. They're going to need to ask more open-ended questions. What was the role of African Americans in fighting for their rights even before the Civil War began? So they could change the question and set a research agenda.
So what do you see happen after kids have participated in this questioning process?
What students and teachers have said is that when they learn how to ask their own questions, they become more engaged. They have more ownership of what they are learning, and they learn more.
It's harder. Yeah. It's harder work for them. It hurts
That's
their
right.
heads.
To That's right.
is a lot of the kids are saying.
That's right.
But what? Can you see test scores? I hate to bring right. those up, but sure. can you see a way it's...
Right now, at this point, what we have is just what's reported to us from students and teachers. We think that this has enormous research potential. In our work in healthcare, we've had NIH-funded studies that have actually looked at the use of our strategy for teaching patients in community mental health centers how to participate more effectively. And they've shown that it's doubled and tripled patient participation in their health care. We're really looking for researchers in education to say, well, wait, if we have student A who's sitting there not asking questions, listening passively, not knowing how to problem solve, and student B who is there asking questions, able to problem solve, able to figure things out. When they don't understand something, they can ask clarifying questions. They can think for themselves. You tell us who's going to have better test scores.
Or results. Do the test scores even matter? I mean, maybe they both get good test scores, but we circle back to what kind of adults they become. You know,
exactly.
Are they able to ask questions? And, Luce, I think I remember reading that you bring some personal experience to this. Do I remember reading that you were at one point a welfare recipient?
Yes.
You know, what was the role of questions there, or the lack of the right questions?
Well, I didn't know how to navigate these systems. I didn't know how to seek services. And by spending some time in deliberatively learning skills, learning how to navigate the systems, I was able to help myself. And one issue with the skill of asking questions is that usually it's not taught.
It's not taught.
Right. And there is a need for spending time on that, because once you know how to ask your own questions, you can apply that everywhere. You can help yourself. You can become more independent. You can get what you need.
Well, some say, you know, being able to ask questions is critical to democracy.
You can imagine a tyranny or a dictatorship without questions, but you can't imagine a healthy democracy without questions.
When you don't participate, when you are disengaged from decisions, you also believe that you don't have the right to ask the questions.
Mm. There's a power issue. Lawyers will go into a doctor's office and say, I didn't know what to ask. I just sat there. Doctors will go into a lawyer's office and say, I have no idea what to ask in this situation. So what we're trying to do is to cut through this barrier of not having expertise to say, how can you figure out at least what you need to know if you don't have that existing knowledge right there.
That's Dan Rothstein. We've also been speaking with Lucy Santana. They are co-directors of the Right Question Institute. Are we finished?
I think so.
Is that the right question? Their new book is called Make Just One Change, Teach Students to Ask Their Own Questions. Dan, Luce, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, what question should I have asked? Or when do you wish you'd had the perfect question but didn't? Go to hearnow.org or facebook.com/hearnowradio. You can tweet me at hearnowrobin. We'd love to hear from you. Latest news is next. Here and Now.